Welcome to the April podcast of the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. I'm Josie Briggs, editor-in-chief of the journal. My guest today is Magdalene Assemann. Dr. Assemann is assistant professor in the Division of Nephrology and Hypertension at the University of North Carolina. Her current research focuses on using electronic healthcare records and claims data to evaluate the safety and effectiveness of medications used in the dialysis population. She has been part of our editorial team as an editorial fellow for almost 2 years. Dr. Assemann, thanks for joining me for this conversation.
Thank you, Josie. I'm very glad to be here today.
So I want to use as a starting point for our discussion the superb editorial you contributed that was just published in our April issue. The piece is titled The Non-Inferiority Complex. Great title, by the way. What do non-inferiority trials tell us? So your co-authors are Gary Cutter. Dr. Cutter is a regular and highly valued stats editor for JASN, and Joanne Bargman, the associate editor who oversees review of much of the work related to dialysis. Congratulations on this superb perspective piece. It's a terrific contribution to clarity on an important topic.
Thank you, Josie. It was a really fun piece to write, and it helped me writing it to learn more about non-inferiority trials. So that was very interesting, and it was educational for me to do so.
Good. And so why did you and Joanne decide a perspective of this sort was actually sorely needed?
Yeah, this is a great question, Josie. I think our primary motivation for writing this what piece was that the conduct of non-inferiority trials in the nephrology world is being much more and more common. And I think all of us in the nephrology world are it's very easy for us to understand and interpret traditional superiority trials that compare and evaluate if one treatment is superior over a placebo or another treatment. So it's almost like back of the hammer or a natural instinct, and they're very easy for us to kind of evaluate the quality of these studies, these type of trials, and how to interpret their results. And I often find that non-inferiority trials can be kind of complex and are challenging to interpret. So we wanted to put together a guide that folks could look to and learn from as they're going through kind of the non-inferiority trial that we discuss in the piece, but also it's as a reference for them to look at that's written in a very approachable and easy way that gets across the kind of most important points about how to interpret these type of trials. So I think it hopefully can be a valuable contribution in that aspect.
Yeah, I think it will be. It sometimes feels like a double negative, this non-inferiority. So give us a quick view of the highlights. What do you think about when you look at an inferiority trial?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing is to kind of recognize what they're assessing. So what you're thinking about is evaluating is if a new treatment is non-inferior, so it has essentially you could think of it as similar or if not a slightly similar efficacy that might be diminished as an existing treatment. And then the kind of, one of the advantages or one of the kind of reasons that's touted for these non-inferiority trials is that maybe it's okay to a clinician that a new treatment is slightly less efficacious, but then it offers other potential benefits to patients. So it might be offered orally versus the existing treatment is offered, patient has to go in and get injections or infusions. So it might offer more convenience. It might be cheaper, but might be cheaper for some reason, or other different advantages. It could have a better side effect profile than the existing treatment. So in that case, you'd be trading less side effects, so potential harm for the patient or risk for harm or lowering or mitigating that for potential a little bit decrease of efficacy. So I think that's important to kind of think about. And then the key to interpreting non-inferiority trials, as we highlight in the commentary, is the non-inferiority margin. And then to do that, you look at where either the upper or lower limit of the confidence limit lies relative to that non-inferiority margin to determine if it's the kind of treatment being evaluated is actually non-inferior.
Yeah, I really like the figure in your paper. It really illustrates this point very clearly. The inferiority margin that you've set as when you designed the trial, and then the confidence limits that surround your measure of efficacy. I think you make that much clearer than most people who've talked or presented that issue. So the specific non-inferiority trial in the April issue is the Rockies trial, which tested whether the HIF inhibitor roxadustat was non-inferior to epoetin alpha for the treatment of anemia in dialysis-dependent kidney patients. So what is the primary take-home message from this study?
Yeah, so I think the primary take-home message from the Rockies trial was that roxadustat was shown to be non-inferior to epoetin alpha or EPO for the treatment of anemia among dialysis patients. And kind of how you could see this is the change in hemoglobin in the roxadustat arm in the trial was a 0.77 increase from baseline. And then the corresponding change in the EPO arm, so the comparator arm, was 0.68. So this translates into a difference in hemoglobin rise between groups of 0.09. And then the lower bound of the confidence limit of this 0.09 estimate was actually greater than the non-inferiority margin that was set. So it was justified for the authors to say that roxadustat was not inferior to EPO in changing hemoglobin. But key with this one, I think it's easy to see of comparing that 0.77 number rise in the roxadustat group to the EPO group, you could just see that they result in kind of similar hemoglobin rise. And in a way, I didn't really find this finding or the finding of similar efficacy was not surprising to me, given that roxadustat has been shown to be effective at increasing hemoglobin levels for the treatment of anemia in previous studies, and namely the phase 2 trials that have been done. And then in kind of therapeutic practice, we know that we target specific hemoglobins, and they might vary where, depending on where patients are in the world. But we know that EPO for many, many years is a standard treatment for anemia, and it's very effective. So if both treatments are targeting hemoglobin rise and they've been shown to be able to do that, it's not surprising that, again, roxadustat, because it has hemoglobin increasing abilities and is an effective drug, that it was found to be non-inferior to EPO.
Right. So I think it's important for everyone to understand this is not about safety issues per se. Comments?
Yeah, I think, you know, the focus on roxadustat in this specific study was to establish that it was non-inferior to EPO with regards to efficacy. And there has been potential safety issues that have arisen with all the HIF inhibitor drugs. In particular, there has been potential safety concerns, namely cardiovascular and thrombotic safety concerns with roxadustat and some of the other HIF inhibitors. And this drug hasn't been approved by the FDA here in the United States, although it's been approved in some other countries. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the uptake of this newer medication will be in dialysis dependence CKD in patients that have anemia, and if it's going to, you know, if there's going to be an uptake in the use and potential, if there's potential safety signals once the drug is used more in the kind of real world setting.
Right. This is an ongoing saga right now. It's not approved in the U.S. And of course, EPO has safety concerns as well. So this is a complex issue that I think everyone in nephrology is following with substantial interest. So I want to ask you a bit about your experiences being part of the peer review team at JASN as an editorial fellow. You've now spent almost 2 years participating in our processes. What are your comments about the experience? You've submitted papers, of course, so you've experienced peer review from both sides now. What are you learning, and were there any surprises?
Yeah, so I have had a wonderful experience. It's been a real privilege and honor to work with the leaders in the field of nephrology who sit on the JASN editorial board. In particular, I want to make sure to give a shout out to my primary mentor, Dr. Joanne Bargman. She's a fantastic teacher, and every time we interact, I always learn something new from her. So it's been a great almost 2 years working with Joanne. With regards to experiencing peer review from both sides now, I think from, you know, being kind of having an insider view of kind of what goes on the editorial end, what I have a better insight into is the thoughtfulness and consideration that goes into assessing every manuscript that's submitted to JASN. I think as an editorial team, we try very hard to make sure we're publishing clinically interesting and clinically impactful papers that will push the field of nephrology forward in a variety of different ways. It's a tough process though, but everyone works very hard to make sure it's very fair and very thorough.
Yeah, I'm glad you're learning things from our team. It is a fabulous team. We're also learning enormous amounts from the editorial fellows. You have a very strong stats background and have contributed importantly to rigorous statistical evaluation of work. And we also always bring in almost always bring a statistician in. Any aspects of peer review related to statistical assessment that have surprised you or been important to emphasize?
Yeah, so I'm an observational research, and I'm an epidemiologist by kind of research training. So I think where my expertise lies is in kind of the conduct and design of observational studies and thinking about biases that can pop up in the setting of these studies. And then kind of a natural pair to that is the technical statistical analysis. So I certainly see across the board on any studies that are done how critical rigorous statistics are. So it could be from basic science research and thinking about sample size of rats that are needed in studies to clinical trials, which having pre-specified protocols that are registered on clinicaltrials.gov with acceptable and precise outcome definitions are important, to kind of all the way up to observational studies that are done as well, and kind of clearly explaining methods, clearly explaining how you're defining exposures and outcomes, and having that come across in the paper in the submissions is really important. And it's things that we have looked for. In particular, I've had the opportunity to kind of handle a lot of papers that have been clinical trials over the past couple of years. And what has been emphasized to me is the importance of pre-registration of trials and how our statistical reviewers always compare the data that is presented in a manuscript to the original pre-specified plans that are outlined on sites like clinicaltrials.gov or analogs for other locations across the world.
Right. The pre-specified outcome variable is really a very key aspect. Where our statisticians never let us get away with publishing work in which the pre-specified outcome measure is not the central element of the analysis. Well, I'm delighted you've had a good experience in our editorial fellow program at JASN. You've done superb work for us. I hope our listeners know about this program. Applications for the editorial fellow program are now open and will be till the end of the month. The program is directed particularly at people starting research careers in nephrology. Most of our editorial fellows are at the stage of towards the end of training and thinking about transitioning into faculty positions, or are already just started as junior faculty members. We have about half and half clinical and basic science researchers, and we welcome having both. That's kind of what we publish. It's about half basic, half clinical, and that's reflected in the composition of our team. But in fact, we find that clinical perspective improves the review and thinking about the basic work and vice versa. You've done great work for us, and I really appreciate having you. I have learned a lot from you, and I'm learning a lot from our editorial fellows. Thank you for joining this discussion and for your excellent work as part of our team.
This podcast is copyrighted by the American Society of Nephrology. All rights reserved. All content in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. This podcast should not be used in a medical emergency or for the diagnosis or treatment of any medical condition. Please consult your doctor or other qualified healthcare provider if you have any questions about any medical condition or before taking any drug, changing your diet, or commencing or discontinuing any course of treatment. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the American Society of Nephrology.